Commencement, the Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education by Kate Colbert and Joe Sallustio with contributions by Elvin Freites is now available for pre-order on Amazon. Get your Kindle edition or your softbound book. It's going to be
amazing.
If you're someone who's passionate about transforming education, which you are if you're listening to this podcast, you should check out the Charles Koch Foundation. The Charles Koch Foundation supports social entrepreneurs and organizations that are embracing innovation to build better solutions for today's learners. Visit ckf.org to learn more. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio back with you here in another episode. Again and again, it never ends. We've, as you know, passed 500 episodes. We're on our way already to 1,000. People say, how do you do it? And I go, I don't know. We're booking out to January now. So somebody contacted me on LinkedIn and said, I want to get on your podcast. We sent them our link. It's the middle of January. And they said, seriously? And I said, yeah, seriously. We have a lot of people coming on this podcast, and we of course like to bring back people sometimes to record as a guest as a second time, sometimes to be a guest host so they get to experience Ed Up on both sides of the microphone. And I've brought one of those folks back today. I'm kind of very excited. I was like, I need to really find a low energy person. This is my criteria. It's like, I need to find a low energy person to balance out my high energy. And of course I've put my coffee out of reach. So you're all welcome that I can't get more caffeine in me. But I was like, she's low energy. She's got the perfect low energy personality. And I was like, she's going to balance it out. And we'll see if I'm right. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is. She's Dr. Erica Beck, and she's the president at Cal State Northridge. Erica, how are you?
I am great, Joe. And the good news for everyone is that my coffee is right here within reach. I'm sure I won't be low energy.
I would never use low energy to describe you. Of course, this is going to be nice and loud and fun, this episode. Erica, you had such a great episode of the Ed Up Experience. It's got, I don't know, 500 or 600 times it's been downloaded ridiculously. How do you feel about being on the other side of the mic?
I'm really excited to have some conversation with colleagues about where we're going in higher ed. So looking forward to it, and especially looking forward to the sound effects.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
Yikes!
We're gonna get going, bringing our guests right in, because we got a lot to ask and they've got a lot to say. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, first, Derek Anderson. He's Senior Vice President of Learning and Engagement with ACE. Derek, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having us today. We're excited to be here.
All right. Well, you say we're, so I guess I got to get my other guest right in. Here she is. She's Dr. Gail DeDavis, and she's the AVP and Chief of Staff of Learning and Engagement at ACE. Gail, how are you?
Doing great. Very glad to be here.
Are you guys ready for this? Are you?
I think we are. Yeah.
Really?
So.
Really?
All right. Well, we'll get right into it. Let's assume for a second that somebody on this call is not familiar with ACE. Derek, I'll start with you. What is ACE? What do you do and how do you do it?
That's a great question. So ACE is the American Council on Education. And I think the best way to describe what ACE does is to look at its name. As a council, it defines itself by its ability to bring people together, to unite people. It's a huge organization with a huge membership, huge even by Washington, D.C. standards. And so we have more than 1,700 members, probably approaching 1,800 members, and they include colleges and universities from literally every sector. Every type of college and university is represented as a member of ACE. And if you're familiar with Washington, you ask, you know, how is it possible that you can get anything done when you have 1,800 members? That seems to defy the calculus of collective action, especially in higher education, where the interest of colleges and universities vary by sector and by type. And the answer there is that we abide by the calculus of a council. We're not an association, we're a council. We actually find great strength in the diversity of the interests of our members. And we find a lot of power in bringing our members together to, as a team, as a totality, to work together to shape the future of higher education and to respond to the challenges that emerge in the meantime. So that's a little bit about what ACE does. We have a strong policy focus. Our history, we're more than 100 years old. We've been involved at ACE and many in the design of many interventions that have fundamentally changed the resource environment of higher education, and also what I like to call the who, the why, the what, and the how of American higher education. One thing that I think is overlooked about ACE is that we spend a lot of time with a network of non-institutional partners as well. We have more than 100 partners in our learning evaluations team, which is a team that is really working hard on expanding the who, the why, the what, and the how of higher education. I think we'll be able to talk a little bit about that today. So thank you, Joe.
Yeah, I love it. Gail, I'll go over to you for this next question, then I'll pass it off, Erica, because I know you're chomping at the bit to get into this right away. One of the things that I like about ACE and the work that you do, and you actually have it in the what we do, is a section of your website, is that you help institutions build capacity through innovation and innovation in learning. What does that mean exactly? And how does that partnership work? And how does that directional partnership work, I should say?
Well, I think there's, what does that mean? I'll start there. It essentially means that we help provide institutions with the insights, with the information and the resources, and in many ways, the resources not simply being, most people think fiscal, I'm actually talking resources in the form of human capacity and as in the form of innovative thought to move their work forward. How does that translate into the work that we do? Well, it translates through our various program offerings. We have institutional transformation labs that we run annually. Some focused on learner success, some focused on internationalization, et cetera, but also through our policy and advocacy work. Much of the work that we do on the policy and advocacy side is designed to really to advocate for the needs of higher education institutions. And as Derek mentioned earlier, our institutional membership really runs the gamut. And so we've got institutions with varying needs. We're advocating for them all and looking at ways that we can push congressional action, incite innovative thinking and creative thinking to enlarge capacity at all of our institutions.
Erica, I know you're ready.
Yeah. So, well, I'm so excited, been a part of ACE for the entirety of my career. Really appreciate all the good work that y'all facilitate. And I just wonder, what are the top of mind policy issues? There's so many things happening in higher ed right now. Where are you guys moving the needle? What are the biggest, most critical issues? Student loan debt forgiveness comes to mind, but what does that look like for you guys?
That's a great question. Gilda, do you want to take a first pass and all, or what would work better?
Why don't you go for it? Go for it, Derek. I'll fill in any gaps.
Yeah, so great. So there's a few quick answers to that. First is that at ACE, we do track this. We do a survey of college presidents every couple of months. It's called our top of mind survey. And we ask our college presidents, what's keeping you up at night, or what's top of mind for you? Our most recent data tells us that college presidents are worried about student mental health. They're worried about demographics, retention. They're worried about what does college enrollment look like 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 2 years from now, next year. They're worried about faculty, faculty retention. They're worried about the conversion to digital teaching and learning and the integration of digital, digital excellence and digital standards into their new operations. So we are now the first year of colleges and universities that have this radically improved digital capacity because of COVID. And now they're thinking, how do we continue to move forward with that? They're worried about student well-being and student health and various efforts in Washington to improve or that may have consequences for student well-being and student health. And so that's a few. Gelda, did I miss anything? What am I missing?
No, I think you did a great job, Derek. The only things that I might add is, we've been really tracking as an organization some of the more recent recent policies that have come out of the Department of Ed, come out of, so you mentioned student loan debt cancellation. We've been pretty vocal on that as an organization, both advocating for it and talking about the extended need for even greater focus on how we can relieve student loan debt. Looking at Title IX legislation and how Title IX really impacts our campuses, but not our campuses writ large in ways, but just as much as how it impacts students directly and students and learners directly and the campus community as a whole. I'm sure there's a whole lot more that we could talk about, but I wanna make sure we have time for everything else too.
Oh, we got time and we got questions. And, you know, let me ask this one. If you don't mind, Eric, I'm just already jumping in to cut you off. I was like, that's not cool. Right? Do you want to keep going?
No, it's completely okay, Joe, because I'll cut you off the next time. So we'll be even in that way.
All right. So student loan stuff and the student loan debt cancellation, this is a big issue, right or wrong, it happened. One of the things that pops up amongst my circles that I have across LinkedIn is, what about the student today or yesterday that went and took out too much debt, right? Like, do we have this front end problem without a solution, you know, and it's something that I think we're all concerned about, because the only way to really stop the debt problem is from the beginning somehow, when somebody goes to school for the first time and looks at student loans and says, I'm not going to take out more than the cost of tuition, or I'm going to go to an institution that has a reasonable cost. How do we fix the front end? I know that's like such a loaded question, but that is a policy problem, right? It needs attention. Let's put it that way. Now, how do we put focus and attention on fixing the front end of that problem? Anybody?
What a great question. So let me start with this. One of the things that we've been really honing in on at ACE in the past few months is how do we have more of a role in shaping the future of higher education? How do we really start to look at the big problems, those wicked issues that have just continued to haunt the sector? This is one of them. Recognizing that so many of our students take out way more debt than they're really able to manage in a lot of ways is significant. And so one of the things that you're absolutely right, we've got to figure out how to fix this on the front end of the problem. We're not there yet as a sector, but this is a critical part of a conversation that needs to happen and that we're hoping to play an active role in.
So I also wonder about the articulation of institutions like mine, right? So my institution is incredibly affordable. We certainly have students who have significant need, but our students don't assume tremendous amount of debt. The public institutions that are really, you know, top of lists for social mobility. And I don't know that we always do a great job of articulating our particular value in driving the future of economic, civic vitality of the regions that we serve. And I just wonder if you have thoughts about how we can do a better job of articulating that distinction, because not all universities are, you know, enormously expensive to attend. And some states like California have really, really robust financial aid programs in addition to what we get at the federal level. So it's something I always think about. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that.
So I'll jump in here first and then pass it over to Gelda. But I think there's two parts to your question. I think that's a great question, Erica. And I know your experience as a president is, you can speak to this in a way that's unique, that maybe only, you know, the handful of you who are college presidents are really sort of contending with, but it's the how do you communicate value, you know, question. And there's two parts to it. One is the value, you know, to the consumer, and one is value to the, there's at least two parts, value to the consumer and then value to the community and value to the state or value to the, you know, whatever it is that your community is. And I think we have to recognize that most universities have multiple communities. So in the first place, when we talk about value to the student, there's obviously a financial component to that. And there's a strong need that we have to, I think, to help our students be more financially literate as they enter college. Obviously, not all of college is a financial transaction. A lot of college is, you know, a human. It's a human experience. It's a it's a sociological experience. It's an emotional experience. It's an intellectual experience. But an important part of it is the financial experience and the financial transaction there. And so, yeah, there has to be you know, a return on investment that's communicated to the student, and the students have to understand you know, all the nuances of that. I'll pause there for just a minute and just say, part of what makes the student loan crisis so complicated is that there are lots of signals out there, and we got to make sure we get the right signals to the right people at the right time. And just the challenge of we built our financial aid system on a lot of assumptions, and I don't know if those assumptions remain valid. And a lot of those assumptions relate to who is the learner and what the learner needs. And I think we need to revisit those assumptions and then go back and revisit the financial aid system. So I'll return back to the original question, which was, you know, the communicate value. The other part of that is how do we communicate value to the community in which we're embedded? And we're seeing increasingly that colleges and universities are being asked to do more. So I'm a faculty member at Arizona State University, and during COVID, Arizona State University was involved in not just teaching and keeping, you know, the education trains running, but it was also just doing, you know, millions of COVID vaccines and COVID tests, you know, and so colleges are all over the country are doing more. And so I think there's this challenge of saying, you know, we're here to educate, we have our core mission, and then we do a lot more. Gelda, what else am I missing there in terms of the value?
I don't think you've missed anything, but I will add something just from my perspective. And so I don't know how many people are aware of this in general, but there's probably a third of college students who actually don't need to borrow any money to go to college. And so I think there's a realization that there's a narrative out there that pretty much everybody's going broke trying to go to college. That's not actually the case. However, the challenge with this is that for those who are borrowing, many of them are borrowing at levels that make it very difficult for them to pay back. So there is an issue that we need to address here. The overarching value conversation really does kind of need to balance out both the realities of what is, along with the maybe optimism of what could be, if we can devise a system that really works across the board for all students equally well.
Well, it's such an important point. And I wonder, sorry, Joe, I'm just going to take over your whole show here. I wonder the role that social mobility metrics play in that conversation, to your point, and the ways in which we measure the success of institutions. It's not just the social mobility and economic pieces, right? There's also the really important civic and learning intellectual outcomes. But to your point about the sort of deciphering, I mean, I just wonder sort of thoughts about the embeddedness on the social mobility metrics, you know, clear data about where you're moving students and overall income.
Yeah, I'll chime in here really quick. This issue of metrics is really challenging. It's a big focus a big focus for us in the next few years is how do we measure socio and economic mobility and how do we measure it in the right way that captures the array of different institutions that are lifting here. One of the challenges I think is that if you want to do well, there is a proven method, and that's to only let certain kinds of students into your system. But if you want to do right, you know, then that's an opposition, you know, and so. So the challenge here is how do we, I think, develop metrics that are reflective of the diverse roles that institutions play throughout the country in improving socioeconomic mobility. I can elaborate a little bit more on some of that, but I think it'd be kind of boring. But you know,
not to me, it wouldn't be boring, but maybe to the listeners.
Gelda, what's your, you know, Gelda's experience? Gelda has, you know, she's been in Washington longer than I have. She's been at ACE longer than I have. She's also been on campus as well. So I'm curious to get Gelda's perspective on this as you know, as well.
Yeah. You know, I was, as you were talking, Derek, I was thinking about, some of my campus experiences. And so just kind of, I'm going to give a little bit of my background just to situate what I'm about to say. I worked historically on college and university campuses that served and my role focused on serving students who were either in marginalized communities in general, primarily focused on providing support mechanisms for Black and Brown students as they matriculated through higher education. And one of the things that I think was most challenging was this realization that, and helping the students in themselves and their families in many ways to both understand that the higher education system that many of them were moving through on the campuses that we were at in particular, those systems weren't necessarily designed for certain populations of students, right? And yep. So we were really trying to figure out in this conversation, everyone sent their kid to college with the hopes that they would come out better positioned than they were as individuals at that age, and that they would come out, frankly, with a job. And so that they were prepared to go into the workforce and be successful. In those conversations, there were so many aspects that were, it was this mindset of you go to college, you leave, you get a good job, you make money, you're successful, right? Hopefully you do something that contributes to society along the way. But the realities of what we see when we look at the data around social mobility is that the model doesn't work equally well for everyone. And I would say that I think, you know, to Derek's point, if we're really trying to measure social and economic mobility, we really have to be honest with ourselves and recognize the fact that the system isn't designed to support an equitable level of social and economic mobility for all students. And frankly, that's the big role that I think ACE has to play as we think about the future of higher education. One of our commitments as an organization is to champion equity access and completion. But in the process of championing equity access and completion, and as a byproduct of that, we should see more equitable outcomes when we think about social and economic mobility for all for more students, progressively more students along the way.
Could not agree more. Absolutely could not agree more.
Too many learners are being left behind by the current one-size-fits-all model of education. We here at EdUp and our friends at the Charles Koch Foundation see a better path forward. The Charles Koch Foundation supports innovators in education who are building and scaling new pathways to allow all learners to discover their potential. By changing the way we think about education, we can unlock opportunities for millions more Americans. To learn more about the Charles Koch Foundation support of individualized education, visit ckf.org. One of the things that you have in your learning and engagement division is you have three kind of components, right? Equity-minded leadership, student success, and institutional transformation, which of course, a lot of questions around what that means, because that whole thing that you've just talked about, Gilda, the system, to change it, institutions have to transform. What does that look like from ACE's perspective, institutional transformation? And I ask that knowing that sometimes higher ed's biggest competitor is not the institution down the road, it's the value of a college degree that's being completely dissected by loads and loads of people, and you wonder who's out there saying, don't go to college, you know, do this other path. And it's like, could I say that to my kids? I don't think I could. You know, and who's getting that said to them? I don't know if it's the one percenters that are not sending their kids to college. It's you know, who's this message hitting? And are we convincing people of color and from disadvantaged communities not to go to college because of all this noise? There's just so much in what institutions have to do to transform, to stay viable, and to continually help transform society in a positive way. So what is institutional transformation? What does it need to be? In order for higher ed to continue to, serve its purpose?
That's a great question.
Easy question, you guys. Just take a couple seconds. You should be able to nail that one.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that when I answer that question, I want to stop and go back in time and then come to today. So ACE has, I think, ever, you know, since day one, ACE has been about expanding You know, I mentioned the who, the why, the what, and the how of higher education. Our earliest initiatives at ACE involved, involved a strong and deliberate focus on engaging on gender equity. Really, is that was a big, strong, and early focus, and that remains a core focus today. And we've expanded. We've had initiatives that have involved military learners through the GED and also through the GI Bill and through the Higher Education Act. We've been really focusing a lot on neglected learners and learners that were not just neglected, but were neglected by design, and trying to find out how to fix the design and put patches on the design in order to make make the design work for the neglected learners or the otherwise disengaged elements of society. Over time, we realized that part of the solution involved providing support for institutions to carry out their own transformation journeys. And so for us, institutional transformation is about us being there to help you take the journey that you feel like you need to take as an institution. And so I say that it means typically we support through our transformation labs. We support not just institutions, but teams of leaders from institutions. And so it's a team-based, transformation experience. It's also cohort-based transformation experiences. And so when you go on your transformation journey through one of our institutional transformation labs, you're doing it with another team from another institution as well. But I would say first and foremost, it's about you coming to us and us helping you go on the journey that you want to go on. And so it's about self-determination, and it's about identity and your identity and pursuing the identity pursuing, I think, the future that you need to have based on your identity. Gelda, would you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. Derek, I think I always want to add something. Doesn't it seem like that at this point?
That's it's a podcast. You got to add.
We support institutional transformation both through directing change efforts at the institutional level, but also at the individual level. A lot of the work that we do also helps individuals who are focused on serving as change agents to develop the skills, understand the approaches, think about the future of higher education in a more holistic way, and how that future state, that future desired state that Derek talked about, the journey they want to go on as an institution, what they can start doing now in their role to facilitate that the incremental changes that it will take to get the institution there.
Amazing.
We work with a lot of people through our various programs who are in leadership roles primarily, but also individuals who may be in less visible roles on campuses, but leaders in their own rights and still affecting positive change for those institutions. And so that's the other way I would say that we transform institutions from the inside out.
So important.
Well, I got one more question.
Oh, sorry, Joe.
I was just messing with you.
I was going to cut you off. Well, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate that, because I often talk about on my campus, right, the imperative for distributed leadership. I can't alone change anything. And we are particularly focused on equitable educational outcomes and redesigning the university to authentically serve the richness of diversity of the communities that we're so proud to serve.
But I can't do that
well. And so thinking about all of those plays, especially an institution as large as Cal State Northridge, their leadership is everywhere. So thank you for that recognition and for providing that support for the institutions. It's having an impact.
That's awesome to hear.
That's a nice testimonial. That's a nice testimonial. I think that's important, right? How much is institutional transformation on your mind, Erica? I mean,
you know the answer to that question, Joe.
I do, but I think it's kind of relevant to ask you again here,
Yeah. So, I mean, the entirety of my career really has been about how do you build, I've been in younger institutions, newer institutions, but how do you really build an academic community around equity, deeply embedded in inequitable outcomes, committed to disrupting intergenerational inequity and facilitating more vibrant civic life? And so we actually, Cal State Northridge is very much a leader in these spaces. But we, you know, spend a lot of time in disaggregated data, being honest to your point, Gilda, about being really honest about where are those equity gaps and where do we have to rethink the ways in which we authentically serve the many different communities that we have, and how do you facilitate a sense of belonging? Community, multiple communities within a larger community, and really think about the ways in which, to Derek's earlier point, the ways in which the systems and the structures that we have inherited and the ways in which they were built right in early on in higher education were by design inequitable. So it's top of mind for me every day, and finding colleagues and harnessing the intellectual capital of like-minded colleagues around the country to think about the ways in which we eliminate those systemic barriers, those administrative blocks, the ways in which we, I often call it the hidden curriculum, you know, all of those things you need to be able to navigate to be a successful college student that have nothing to do with academic aptitude. Certainly top of mind for me, and the affordability piece, right smack in the middle, and then scale. How do you scale interventions that actually have an impact in such a way that you can resource them? Because institutions like mine, right, we live in a significantly resource constrained environment. So scale is always top of mind, which I know it is for ACE as well.
What do you guys think about, and the reason I ask that, because that's such a good foundation. Student success is one of the things that we talk about a lot, and it's built within your ACE materials. Student success means so many things. It's really hard to define. Like, it's easy to define if we're talking about completions. Like, is a student complete? That could define student success. But it seems to mean more than that today. And it's an ever-evolving term that seems to mean a lot of things and nothing at the same time, right? So somebody wants to help a student say, oh, we're really championing student success. Or, you know, now we're in the food business. Some colleges are in the business of food with Food Pantry. You know, is that student success? What is student success from the ACE perspective in general? Either or, Derek or Gail, to whoever wants to take that one. Because it means a lot.
That's a great question. I'll start from my perspective, and then I'm really anxious to hear Gelda's. Gelda, prior to joining ACE, this was sort of like her part of her world. And so not to say it wasn't, it was also part of my world, but I came from the faculty. So the issue of student success, I feel like, begins with a conversation about access. And throughout the past, you know, three or four generations, we've done a lot in this country in terms of access to higher education, but the outcomes haven't been, I think, sort of linearly mapping with the efforts that we put into access. And so to state that differently, you know, we're not really seeing, as you know, we're not seeing the returns that on the investments for our on our investments in access. And the reason why is because access is only part of the picture. Success is, you know, success has to go hand in hand with access. And we don't do a lot, I think, in terms of sort of pausing and asking ourselves from the perspective of a student, what you know, from the perspective of every single type of student, what am I going to need in order to be successful? We don't do a lot at the policy level. We do a lot of that at the campus level, but at the policy level, there's not as much support for, you know, for these sorts of student success initiatives. We're getting there, and that's what we're doing at ACE is sort of we're helping to get there. But I think we have to recognize that that the system that we've inherited was built based on a limited number of perspectives, and therefore it's completely valid based on a limited number of learners. And as we expand the number of learners who are part of the system and who we want to be part of the system and who we embrace as part of the system, we also have to expand and we have to change the system itself. So I was a transfer student. I went to a community college before I went to a four-year college. My experience as a transfer student is I think very different than what the institutions were designed to facilitate. And transfer was sort of bolted on as an additional consideration. And that's something we're paying attention to a lot here in Washington, is how do we make transfer work? And that's an example of one of the patches that we're putting on the system. Gelda, what's been your experience on the student success side?
Let me, again, tap into my background and then I'll bring it forward. One of my background was on a college campus, on various college campuses in the student success realm. I did most of my work on the student affairs side of the house. So a lot of what we did was to provide support mechanisms for students and to partner with the academic side of the house to ensure that students had what they needed to be successful overall on the campus. My favorite poem, I used every role I had this poem hanging on my office wall. It's called "The Student Is." And it's the first line says, "The student is the most important person on the campus. Without students, there would be no need for the institution at all."
Epic.
When I think about student success, you know, there's a couple of ways that Derek covered this really well, but ultimately when I think about student success, I think about student development and the ways in which a campus environment should be designed to support optimal student development. And that's students in various stages of life, that students in various paths, that students in whatever way they come to us, we should be designed to provide the optimal support mechanisms to help them achieve their goals. There's a theory in student development, the theory of challenge and support. Many of our campuses do really well on the challenge side, not necessarily all that well on the support side, right?
What?
But in order for a student to be successful, any of the challenges that they experience as they're matriculating through our institutions really have to be met with the proper supports and structures to help them sufficiently tolerate that stress. So when we think about student success, there's ways that you could think about it from the individual perspective, which is kind of what I'm describing, right? Like, how do we meet the needs of those individual students? And then there's the larger picture that Derek focused on, where we really look at how do we help institutions, how do we help the field to think more broadly about how we define student success? I actively recall some of the students that I worked with on campuses. One success story literally was just me think every day I met the student on his first day, every day I would ask him, "What did you learn today?" 4 weeks go by and he finally runs into my office and says, "I have to tell you what I learned today." I asked him that question every single day. And he finally came and started telling me what he was learning. It was like a light bulb went off for him, because I don't know that he really realized he should be learning something every day until that point.
Yes.
That was a measure of success from my book.
I ask my children that question every day. And I say, "What did you learn in school today?" And they have yet to answer me with anything. So now I have a hope that they will in fact recognize that they too should be learning every day. And I think it's such
the same of my kids, and it comes out, "How was your day? What'd you learn?" "Nothing." "Good."
Yeah. I get the same thing, right, Joe? Same thing. I think it's such an important point. And I think really the heart of it is shifting the conversation from what students do or do not do in order to be successful to what institutions must do in order to enable the success of all of our students. And I think sound effects are so great, Joe.
Good point.
Yeah. And I think there's a way in which at times individuals approach that conversation from a deficit model, that yes. If our students aren't succeeding, there's something wrong with them. And you're absolutely right. It's how do we set up our campuses to enable and facilitate the greatest level of success?
Yeah, how do we harness the aspirational capital and cultural wealth that our students bring to our campuses to facilitate, you know, even greater levels of academic excellence? I couldn't agree more.
It's really it's always been there, but it is really interesting to see how student success evolves. You know, when you add on mental health, which we all know, we talk about all the time, maybe we didn't touch it that much or as much. Yeah, we had mental health services and, you know, but certainly the pandemic made student success be like it was a consequence of everything else we provided, of everything else we do that brings a student to success. And you can have a student with an outcome that may not be successful, right? They got through, but maybe they weren't prepared enough to really be successful once they got their degree and move on because something happened along the way. So you have to watch the students that are doing well. You have to watch the students that are not doing well, the at risk, the not at risk, because everybody, you said it, Gilda, the development, right? That's really, there's a light bulb that has to go off at some point. When you can see it, boy, is that a moment as an educator where you remember that you have a noble job of helping people change their lives, because sometimes in education, you can forget that. It is hard. Students are tough. It's not easy to work with students, adults or kids. It doesn't matter. It's a tough business to help people. Especially when people find it hard to help themselves, and we have to create systems where they can move through. Anyway, I'm soapboxing. I have a tendency to do that from time to time. Erica, do you have any final questions for our amazing guests before I give them the final two?
I do. I have the softball, the easy question, right?
What?
With all of the transformation that's happening, and Derek, earlier on, you talked about it also, the sort of the shifts in enrollment and institutional types. And given that, you know, ACE is so unique in that, you know, all of higher ed really, right, is represented there. I just wonder what that landscape, you know, 5-10 years from now, sort of high level, what do you think that landscape looks like?
That's a great question. I'll go first, and I have a tradition on my team, by the way, where Gelda gets to go last to wrap everything up. And so I think that's good because it removes from me the burden of being comprehensive, because I know Gelda will catch it.
I thought it was you get to give the wrong answer and then we go to Gelda for the right one. That's what I thought was happening the whole episode.
It's a little bit of that. And so, yeah, for sure. So I'll jump in first before Gelda does so that she can get there to clean up the whatever mess I made. So let's see. I think that the next 5 years are going to be really important for us. We have, you know, we're at a moment in time where we're due for a big transformation. I don't think we should take very lightly the things that are happening in the technology space and what happened during COVID. I think that was a little bit of an awakening for us. And I think that we're now starting to see, as a consequence of COVID, not just the integration of technology into the classroom, but the integration of new ways to think about learning in the presence of technology into the classroom. And so I find a lot of comfort in knowing that there are entire professions around higher education that didn't even exist 5-6 years ago. Instructional design, for example. It's so transformational, and I'm just so happy to know instructional designers and have them in my life. And so the next 4 or 5 years, I think we're gonna see a proliferation of new professions that are dedicated, they're gonna look like they're dedicated to technology, but they're actually dedicated to learning. And then I think that we're gonna see a proliferation of integrations of traditional providers with one another, and then traditional providers with alternative providers, to make a sort of ecosystem of learning that's going to allow the pursuit of all kinds of different experiences for all kinds of different learners. And to use a word that Gelda uses, an abundance of you know, a set of abundance assumptions that we make about learning and what it means to be a learner. Gelda, over to you.
I think
took your word, Gelda. You shouldn't have done that before he passes it.
I'll let him have it. We'll have words later on that. I think probably Derek really just kind of hit where I think we're gonna see some big transitions over the next five years and longer. It is in that alternative provider space. I really do think we're going to see more and more alternative providers popping up in ways that are in alternative credentialing pathways, in ways that are meeting the needs of students who may be somewhat disenfranchised by the traditional model of higher education, but also in helping individuals who have even gone through the higher education traditional model and want to just skill up, retool, as you will as well. So I don't think that's to be overlooked. I really do think we're going to see a really significant uptick in that alternative model space.
You know what's you guys kind of, as your partnership, you know, we joke around that you're cleaning each other up. Erica is a first time co-hosting. She doesn't know, or she doesn't remember, that I ask, what do you see as the future of higher education? Answer to end every episode, but she asked it for me, so I only have to finish with one more question.
Sorry, which is,
no, you don't have to apologize. That's a great fun of being on EdUp. We just kind of roll through it. Whatever train wreck comes out on the other side, that's the fun of it. What do you want to say about ACE, Derek? We'll go to Gail the first. How about that? And then Derek last. What do you want to say about ACE? Anything coming up? Any work that you're doing? Highlights? Anything about the organization we didn't touch on that you feel you want the audience to know? Anything at all?
Where do I start? Let me. I'm going to do like a high level and quick hits. I think as we begin really honing in on our work in shaping the future and looking at what the future for higher education can be, and what the future of higher education in some ways should be to best meet the needs of our learners, the diverse learners that we have in higher education and post-secondary education, we're going to start needing to partner in different ways. And we're going to be looking for institutions, for individuals, for learners themselves to work with us in figuring out what do we need to do to really be effective in shaping the future of higher education. What's really missing? Where are the gaps? Where are the things that they know that we may not have seen even just yet, or solutions that are out there that the community may have ideas on how we can address better? As an organization, I am really excited about the work that we're going to take on to sharpen, to hone in on the future that higher education can be, the promise of higher education that has always existed, and the ways that we will be able to meet the needs of all of our learners, the diverse learners, the students coming from various backgrounds, students coming with different life needs, students coming to us, having faced different challenges all along. How do we provide for them? These are the critical questions that we're going to have to figure out. And I'm really looking forward to that. Some of the work that we're already starting to do really deeply around that, our work on student mental health. We just concluded earlier this week a roundtable on student mental health. The Surgeon General came. It was a fantastic convening of higher ed leaders to really talk about what can we do and what should we be doing to address student mental health on our campuses, thinking about shared equity leadership and the ways in which we are able to facilitate equity and equitable outcomes through, Erica, you mentioned it earlier, through a more distributed leadership model. Wow, there's so many things, but yeah, I'm just excited about the work that we're really about to push harder in shaping the future of higher education.
Beat that, Derek. Go.
Well, I love working with Gelda. I should just mention that when I was sort of asked to consider this position at ACE, I did so because of a good friendship I have with Ted Mitchell, the president of ACE. But when I took the position, I will say that I think I took the position because I had so much fun just getting to know Gelda in the process of. And so it's been fun working with Gelda. I love having Gelda as a partner. And so because of that, Gelda, I'll sort of carry on where you just left off with the students and being student focused. And what I hope to see and what I'm excited about at ACE is this active recognition that every student comes to higher education complete and full and perfect. And it's our job at ACE to help you as an institution be responsive to those students in the way that they need to be responded to. And so we together as an industry, as a sector, can find as many innovative and neat and new ways to provide for the needs of learners as there are needs for learners and needs of learners. And so every learner comes with a unique need. And I think that together, as we work together and through the American Council on Higher Education, with our help And as we sort of work together as a council to sort of jointly define the future of higher education, I think we can find options for every learner. And that's a crazy and an ambitious set of aspirations that we have. But I think that we are at a point in time where I think anything short of a commitment to providing for the needs of every learner is no longer appropriate. We're there, we've reached that point. And now we can say, like, you know, we are here for every learner.
Wow, what an episode. That was fun. Erica, what'd you think of your time on the other side of the mic?
I really like it, especially the part where I stole your last question and didn't even know. So I'll try to be a better co-host if you have me back again, Joe. But I absolutely relish the opportunity to engage in these kinds of dialogues with other leaders who are thinking about the same things that I'm thinking about every day. So I have really appreciated the wisdom and the discussion, Derek and Gailda. And always love hanging out with you, Joe.
Well, ladies and gentlemen,
come on, put your hands up in the air.
For my guest co-host today, Dr. Erica Beck, president of Cal State University Northridge, and of course, my amazing guests, here they are again. Dr. Gailda Davis, she's AVP and Chief of Staff, Learning and Engagement, and Derek Anderson, Senior Vice President, Learning and Engagement at ACE. Gailda, Derek, how was your EdUp experience today?
It's been amazing. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've just EdUpped. The purpose of education is to help learners discover their aptitudes and interests, develop their skills, and then deploy that knowledge to benefit themselves and others. The Charles Koch Foundation, a nonprofit grant-making organization, works with leaders in education to remove barriers that stand in the way of all learners reaching their potential. They support individualized and flexible models that improve access and quality for millions of Americans. They also support apprenticeship and upskilling programs that connect learners to in-demand jobs that match their skills and interests. The foundation is looking for new partners to challenge the status quo and transform the post-secondary education system. Learn more about their partnership opportunities and apply for a grant at ckf.org. You can also find them on Twitter at C. Koch Foundation and LinkedIn by searching Charles Koch Foundation.